Well, we're going to start with a trivia question here. Now, we live, of course, in the state of Texas. Does anybody know what my dad, when he was six, his family moved to Texas from Virginia. What is the official name for the state of Virginia? Do you know that? The Commonwealth of Virginia. It's not the state, it's the Commonwealth. Now here, if you know this, I'll be really impressed. What's the official name of the state of Rhode Island? I don't know. Rhode Island and Providence Plantations. That's a mouthful. And we'll talk about Providence tonight. Of course, back then, 300 years ago when it was founded, people, Christians, God's people, they love to name things after significant things, biblical things, religious concepts. And of course, the biggest town there is Providence. Technically, in November of 2020, the people voted to change that name. After 300 years, they didn't like the name Plantations. So now it's just the state of Rhode Island. But still, the town is still called Providence, okay? Let's talk about Providence. Now, that word is only used in the Bible one time, at least in the King James and also the New American Standard. And that's not in relation to God. It's in relation to when Paul was on trial in Acts and before Felix, the governor, and this Tertullus, the lawyer, was the prosecuting attorney, if you will. And he was saying, oh, King Felix, by your providence, we're doing really well. Yeah, blah, 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 you know, so he was trying to butter up the king, the governor. But the term, like the word Trinity, although it's not used in reference to God in the Bible, the concepts are voluminous throughout the scripture. So we're going to talk about the providence of God. And let's start in Ephesians. One little verse, Ephesians 1, verse 11. I love Ephesians. It's rich, rich, rich stuff. This first chapter just is, oh, it's glorious. Ephesians 1:11, backing up to verse 10. In him also we have obtained an inheritance, having been predestined according to his purpose. And here it is. Who works all things after the counsel of his will. He works all things after the counsel of his will. Now some of you are acquainted, and I'm guessing maybe Jeff and some others, with the Westminster Confession of Faith. I'm a teacher. You know, do this. Or yeah, say, yeah. 1646, this group of wise, godly men, including Samuel Rutherford, that lends some gravitas to that group, they got together and they summarized the basic tenets of the Christian faith. And I think it's maybe 32 or so different things about God the Father and this and this and this and this. And number, I think it's five, high on the list, is their statement about providence. And they gather all these different scriptures and say, here's what providence is. And this is, of course, 400-year-old language. God, the great creator of all things, doth uphold, direct, dispose, and govern all creatures, actions, and things, from the greatest even to the least, by his most wise and holy providence, according to his infallible foreknowledge and the free and immutable counsel of his own will, to the praise of the glory of his wisdom, power, justice, goodness, and mercy. Although in the relation to the foreknowledge and decree of God, who was the first cause, meaning you know, he causes all things, the first cause, all things come to pass immutably and infallibly. Let me say it again. Although in relation to the foreknowledge and decree of God, all things come to pass immutably and infallibly, yet by the same providence he ordereth them to fall out, meaning to come about, according to the nature of second causes, meaning other things that God uses. So, that's providence, if you can go through that wording. About 45 years later, this Baptist Confession of Faith, have you seen that one, of 1689? Baptists have slipped somewhat in some ways. This long time ago. It's very much like this one. They use the Westminster Confession to get some of their stuff and not reinvent the wheel, but the way they put it was, in 1689, God, the good creator of all things, in his infinite power and wisdom, doth uphold, direct, dispose, and govern all creatures and things, from the greatest even to the least, by his most wise and holy providence, to the end for the which they were created, according unto his infallible foreknowledge and the free and immutable counsel of his will, to the praise of the glory of his wisdom, power, justice, infinite goodness, and mercy. But that's some old 300- and 400-year-old definitions of providence. And I told Steve something. Now he set me up. The past few weeks, he'd been talking about Jacob and his dealings with difficult people, Laban, his father-in-law, and his brother Esau. And I wrote down these things. He said these, quoting Steve Kinnard, in his sermons, he said about Jacob and his dealings, God had a purpose in all this. Things don't just happen in the life of a believer. He said, God did this, and he had a reason for doing it. So he was setting me up for this message tonight about providence. Now I'll be accused of being negative, but I'm going to show what it isn't. There's a song, I don't listen to much on the radio. Most preachers I can't take. Alistair Begg is one exception. Most of the songs I just can't take. There's a song I heard. That's a pretty good song. And I realized, wait a minute. But it's real popular apparently out there. It was written back in the 80s, but kind of it was put out by somebody these days. And it's pretty good except for one line. It says, and you might have heard this, at times the load is heavy. At times the road is long. When circumstances come your way and you think you can't go on, when you're feeling at your weakest, Jesus will be strong. He'll provide the answer when you found all hope is gone. That's good. Meaning we have troubles, we just feel our wits end, and Jesus is going to help us. That's fine, no problem with that. And then she goes on, she meaning the person who wrote the song or the one who sings it, both are females, and tells us the reason we can trust what God's going to do. It says, for I know if he can paint a sunset and put the stars in place, I know if he can raise up mountains and calm the storm-tossed waves, if he can conquer death forever to open heaven's gates, then I know for you, what? Well, to summarize, she says, hey, trouble's going to come. We're going to have problems. But God can help us, and we know God can help us because he's done all these marvelous things. But the last line, and the title of the song, it's just bad theology. It says, to summarize it, it says, he'll find a way. Now, God doesn't find a way. In the first place, that's in the future. He will find a way. Like, you know, he's not going to look and say, well, I'll find a way. No, God doesn't have to find a way. So if you hear that song, and I'm sure the people who sing it, the ones who wrote it, they didn't have any bad motives at heart. They weren't heretics. They had the love of God in their hearts. But I don't think they thought this out. Humans have to find a way. If I'm on my way on some trip, Kim and I are on the road, and we're, you know, talking, and I don't make the turn I'm supposed to or make a wrong turn, and I go the wrong way. Well, I got to find my way back. If I have not gone too far, I can just make a U-turn, go back, and get where I was supposed to go. If I've gone way too far, got to get the map out and say, well, if you go up here to Farm Road, this and do, well, I can find a way back. But that's what we do. Or, you know, maps are old-timey, your GPS does the same thing. If your GPS, if you turn off that voice that tells you where to go, which I can't stand listening to her, I shut her up. But if I make a wrong turn, she's back there somewhere going, no, she can't talk and tell me I've made a mistake. If I look, oh, wait a minute, oh, my goodness, we're 30 miles past where I am. It'll find a way back. It'll reprogram. It finds a way. But God doesn't do that. He doesn't have to find a way. He has made a way. Now, just a little bit of history here. Since I was at least in junior high, my goal was to go to Letourneau College in Longview and major in engineering. I wanted to be an engineer and go to Letourneau. When I was a junior in high school, there was a whole weekend they had set up for high school students. We went to campus. My dad drove me up there. Man, I stayed in the dorm room. I thought these poor guys in these dorms giving up their dorm rooms to high school kids. I was so excited. Man, I went to the labs and saw all these sophisticated equipment that these engineers use. Man, I was more than ever, I was ready to go right then. Next year come along, I was a senior. I think it was the spring semester. I had the papers ready to sign to Letourneau College. Good term to matriculate, but I thought, wait a minute, I don't want to do this. I just lost all interest in the college and engineering. I thought, well, what am I going to do now? Well, a friend of mine had a catalog to SFA. I didn't say already, when we came, my dad drove me up to Longview, we passed through Nacogdoches. And there was this, you know, Stephen F. Austin. I had never heard, nothing personal, I'd never heard of SFA. I didn't know if it was a university, a junior college. We drove through campus. Oh, it's a pretty place. Well, my friend had this catalog to SFA. I said, hey, I've been there. Opened this thing up. I said, hey, forestry. I think I'll major in forestry. So that's the idiotic way I got to SFA. Now, when I decided not to go to Letourneau, God didn't go, oh, my goodness, what has Tom done? Maybe I'll put that SFA catalog in the hands of that friend and maybe I'll read. No. It was his plan from the start for me to be here. I was supposed to be here. And God brought me here through stupid circumstances. I don't want to go there. I want to go here. I want to be a forestry major. You know, it's a pretty place. But I'm here because God wanted me to be here. He wanted me to have the influence of Christian friends. He wanted me to go to Fredonia Hill Baptist Church and meet you guys and come to Bethlehem Mission and meet Kim Kendrick and get married. He had that planned from the start. And no reason even to turn there because you know it by heart. But almost a similar thing as in Ephesians. Romans 8:28. And we know that God causes all things to work together for good. To those who love God, to those who were called according to his purpose. Now, most Christians, no matter how strong, how weak they are in the faith, they know this. But I think many people have a misconception. First of all, when it says work together for good, they think good means, you know, peaches and cream and homemade ice cream and butterflies and pots of gold, you know, some rainbow and a bed of roses. That's not what always good means in God's eyes. And we'll explore that in just a moment. The promise, by the way, is to those who love God, to those who are called according to his purpose. He didn't work those things out for good to the non-believer. He works those things out for good for the elect, his people. That's our promise. And it says he causes all things. It doesn't say, and we know that God will find a way to work all things. No. It doesn't say God rearranges all things. Like, oh, this has happened. Let me rearrange and maybe I can make it work. No, it says he causes all things to work together. It doesn't say God goes behind you and picks up your messes and fixes your mistakes. It says he causes all things. It doesn't say he patches things up with duct tape and baling wire and hopes they hold together. God causes all things to work together. Again, Ephesians 1:11, who works all things after the counsel of his will. But now that brings up a whole thing that you got to explain here. That means if God is doing those things, then that means God, are you saying, Tom, God is using sinful people? Yeah. That God is using sin? Yes. Now, God is never, ever, ever. He cannot be, he will never be the author of sin. He cannot cause sin. He's not the author of sin. But he uses it in his providential purposes. Matthew Henry, quote from him, God serves his own wise and righteous purposes by the imprudences, that means dumb things, and the iniquities of men. Now, I got to use more than some song to discuss. Let's look in the scripture and look at several places to show this. God even uses sin. He uses all kinds of things to accomplish his will and his providences. Look in John 19. Turn there if you want to, or I'll read it to you. John 19, this is Jesus' trial before Pontius Pilate. And in verse 10, so Pilate said to him, in fact, Pilate kind of wanted to let him go because his wife had had this dream and he was scared. He says, you do not speak to me. Do you not know that I have authority to release you and I have authority to crucify you? Jesus answered, you would have no authority over me unless it had been given you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin. Well, God used Pilate's sin. God used Judas's sin. They were both sinners. He used the mockings and scourgings of soldiers, the sinful actions of those people to accomplish God's will. It was God's will from before the foundation of the world that he be crucified for us. Nothing was going to prevent that. But in some mysterious way that we don't understand, God even used, he still does, sinful people. He uses sin. He used the Jews' jealousy, their pride, their lust for position, their lust for power, Judas's love for money, whatever other motives he had. He uses Satan himself. It says that Satan entered into Judas. He used Satan. Satan didn't know what he was doing. God used his misguided actions for his own purposes. He used murder to accomplish his will. Acts 2, 23. Peter's first sermon on the day of Pentecost. Acts 2, 23. And Peter said, this man delivered over by the predetermined plan, the predetermined plan and foreknowledge of God, you nailed to a cross by the hands of godless men and put him to death. You murdered this guy. Godless men were used for the purposes of God. And Peter's second sermon, the next chapter over, Acts 3, 13. The God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, the God of our fathers, has glorified his servant Jesus, the one whom you delivered and disowned in the presence of Pilate when he had decided to release him. But you disowned the holy and righteous one and asked for a murderer to be granted to you, but put to death the Prince of Life. These purposes of God, now yes, they were about Jesus, not about us in that sense. But this greatest plan of God in all time, God used sin and sinful people to accomplish his providence. Genesis 45, and I'm going here where Steve will tread later, but that's okay, it'll be a while. Genesis 45, and you know this very well. This is Joseph and his brothers who didn't treat him very kindly. Genesis 45, and he had already revealed himself to his brothers. They were in that palace in Egypt, and boy, his brothers were scared to death because they realized, we messed up back there, you know, whatever it was, years ago, and he's caught us. But Joseph said, now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. For the famine has been in the land these 2 years, and there are still 5 years in which there will be neither plowing nor harvesting. God sent me before you. God did this. God did this. God sent me before you to preserve for you a remnant in the earth and to keep you alive by a great deliverance. Now, therefore, it was not you who sent me here, but God. All these bad things that happened to him, he said, God did them. After their daddy was gone, they got word again that he was going to be vindictive against them. And so in Genesis 50, verse 20, he says something very similar. As for you, you meant evil against me. Boy, they did, yeah. You meant evil against me, but God meant it for good in order to bring about this present result, to preserve many people alive. Again, God used jealousy. He used pride. He used murderous intent. They would have murdered him, but Reuben had a little compassion. He said, oh, let's throw him in the pit. And he intended to go back later and get him out. God used even just, quote, coincidence. Yeah. Reuben had to leave, be gone for a while, and they pulled Joseph out. The other brother sold him, as he would have rescued him, but he didn't. He had to be gone because it was God's purpose that he be sold in slavery. It just happened, yeah, it just happened, that this caravan's going by. It didn't just happen. God put that caravan, the people heading to Egypt, so they would sell Joseph to them. He used Potiphar's wife, her lust, her lies. Even the cupbearer, he just kind of forgot. Duh, my goodness. Joseph had this dream, got him out of prison, and the cupbearer just kind of forgot to tell Pharaoh, you know, for 2 years or so, whatever. So God used all kinds of things to accomplish his purposes. He is going to do what he wants to do. Now, the problem is, we can't understand this. You think, wait a minute, Tom, you're talking here all for 30 minutes about what providence is, and you're saying, we don't know what it is? Well, no, not really. Roy, have you ever had a four-year-old in your calculus class? Four-year-old, never had one take calculus? Algebra? Why? Because he can't understand it. We're like four-year-olds trying to take calculus. We can't understand calculus. We can't understand the ways of God. His ways are far above ours. Deuteronomy 29:29 says, the secret things belong to the Lord our God, but the things revealed belong to us and to our sons forever. Yeah, there's things that God reveals to us. There's some things he doesn't. And we will never understand how God works these things. Job 33:13, he giveth not account of any of his matters. He doesn't have to explain what he's doing. He doesn't in many cases. Ecclesiastes goes to that list. There's a time for this, a time for this, a time for this. And, you know, there's a time for all these things. Yet, it says, man will not find out the work which God has done from the beginning even to the end. Even though there's a time for this and time, we're not going to figure it out. It's above us. So why talk about all this if we don't even understand it? We can gain comfort. You know, the four-year-old who's not taking calculus, he gets in the car with his daddy for a trip. Whether a short trip, across town, get a hamburger, across the West Texas to go visit, well, whatever it is. The little four-year-old doesn't go, now, daddy, are the tires aired up? Do you know the route? You know, watch out for that red light up there. Now, did you change the oil? He doesn't do all that. He gets in the car and says, are we there yet? Are we there yet? He doesn't care. Daddy's going to drive the car. He knows his father is going to take care of all the details. He doesn't know which route they're going. Doesn't even know where you're going, maybe. He just sits there and his dad is going to take care of it for him. Well, for me, I got, figuratively speaking, in the car to go to Laterno, ended up at SFA. Now, that was, you know, peaches and cream and homemade ice cream and wonderful things. My plans didn't come about, but what did come about was much better than my plans. What about Corrie ten Boom? When the car got to the destination, she was in a concentration camp. She didn't pick it, but God picked it. God chose that. It wasn't a mistake. Those Nazis didn't enter her house, and God goes, oh, my goodness, I didn't plan this. What am I going to do? It was in some way, we don't understand it, but God planned that for her and brought marvelous results from that. Marvelous ministry. Her dad didn't make it out. Sister didn't, but she did, and God used that to his great glory. Johnny Erickson got in the car. Her father, figuratively speaking, was going to drive her, she thought, to the beach and go swimming. And she ended up at the end of her trip in a wheelchair, a quadriplegic, for 50 years. But God did that. We don't understand it. 1 Kings 12 is about Rehoboam. He was a wicked guy, Solomon's wicked son. And he didn't listen to the people that told him how he ought to do this. It says, wherefore the king hearkened not unto the people, for the cause was from the Lord. God did that. Matthew Henry says, when God designs his people for extraordinary trials, he prepares them by extraordinary comforts. He designs his people for certain things, sometimes for hard things. And I don't want to go over too much, but let me read in Matthew Henry. This is Matthew Henry. What did I say? This is Spurgeon. Read some other Matthew Henrys. Spurgeon's Morning and Evening. This is his discussion of Romans 8:28. Again, we know that all things work together for good to them that love God. Upon some points, a believer is absolutely sure. He knows, for instance, that God sits in the stern of the vessel when it rocks most. He believes that an invisible hand is always on the world's tiller, and that wherever providence may drift, Jehovah steers it. That reassuring knowledge prepares him for everything. He looks over the raging waters and sees the Spirit of Jesus treading the billows, and he hears a voice saying, "It is I, be not afraid." He knows too that God is always wise, and knowing this, he is confident that there can be no accidents, no mistakes, that nothing can occur which ought not to arise. He can say, if I should lose all I have, it is better that I should lose than have, if God so wills. The worst calamity is the wisest and the kindest thing that could befall me if God ordains it. He knows that all things work together for good to them that love God. The Christian does not merely hold this as a theory, but he knows it as a matter of fact. Everything has worked for good as yet. The poisonous drugs mixed in fit proportions, meaning mix these poisonous drugs together just right, they have worked the cure. The sharp cuts of the lancet have cleansed out the putrefying flesh and facilitated the healing. Every event, as yet, has worked out the most divinely blessed results. And so, believing that God rules all, that he governs wisely, that he brings good out of evil, the believer's heart is assured, and he is enabled calmly to meet each trial as it comes. The believer can, in the spirit of true resignation, pray, "Send me what thou wilt, my God, so long as it comes from thee. Never came there an ill portion from thy table to any of thy children." We sang Sunday night, I think it was, or Sunday, "Like a River Glorious." Every joy or trial falleth from above, traced upon our dial by the Son of Love. We may trust him fully, all for us to do. They who trust him wholly find him wholly true. Stayed upon Jehovah, hearts are fully blessed, finding, as he promised, perfect peace and rest. Just hope we can have more and more of that perfect peace and rest as we let him work deeper into our spirits, that truth that he works all things after the counsel of his will, and he makes no mistakes.